and welcome to The Executive Appeal, a show that convenes the world's most powerful and successful leaders to share mentoring and career advancement advice to help you successfully transition into senior level executive positions. I'm your host, Alex Trimble, award-winning speaker, author, and leadership expert with over a decade of experience coaching and advising some of our nation's most senior level government leaders. So if you're ready to reach your goals, let's get started. Hey, welcome, you ambitious, awesome, amazing, cool, slick, sly, cool cats, leaders. I don't know. I was kind of channeling my grandpa there for a second. How are you doing today? Welcome to another power-packed episode of the Executive Appeal Podcast. I am your host, Alex Trimble, and I am thrilled to have you joining us today. As you know, this podcast is where we go beyond the ordinary, moving past the cliches of just work hard and you'll achieve all your goals. We all know that's BS. To actually uncover the true secrets of success at the executive level. And as you may know, I am not just your host. I'm not just the awesome, cool, magnificent, slick, sly, very handsome host of the Executive Appeal Podcast. I am an international prolific keynote speaker and executive coach. So if you're seeking an engaging motivational speaker for your next event, look no further. I have had the privilege of addressing audiences around the world, sharing insights that go beyond the surface and leave a lasting impact. So whether it's developing meaningful relationships with your teams, mentors, clients, fellow executives, and other colleagues, I am your guy. Or if it's focusing on providing your audience with the strategies required to achieve exceptional success in the face of all of life's complex challenges, I've got you covered. Don't miss out on your opportunity to elevate your team and your stakeholders' potential. Visit alextrimble.com to book me for your next event today, and let's make that event unforgettable together. And now, with no further ado, let me say, today is a good day. See, today we have the always impeccably dressed Mr. Brooks Rainwater. Brooks serves as the president and CEO of the Urban Libraries Council, an outcomes-driven research and innovations network that has over 160 leading North American public libraries as part of its membership. Under his leadership, ULC champions the future of public libraries by engaging and uplifting members, focusing intently on equity and inclusion, and leading on core policy issues that drive our communities forward. Throughout his career, Brooks has worked to advance urban policies that expand local democracy and provide funding for local programs related to economic opportunity, entrepreneurship, infrastructure, and sustainability. And prior to joining this phenomenal organization, Brooks served as the senior executive and director for Center for City Solutions at the National League of Cities, where he drove the organization's research agenda and oversaw technical assistance effort and leadership education. Let me say, how are you doing today, kind sir?
Doing great. Really happy to be here with you.
Shoot, I'm really happy to be here with you too. You and I, we've had a lot of really great conversation, and I want to start us off in a place where I think it's a softball question for you, but I think it may be very enlightening for those who are listening today. So let me ask you, why public libraries? I mean, why do we even need them? I mean, I got Audible on my phone. So why is this even necessary nowadays?
Public libraries are necessary for a whole host of reasons. First and foremost, they're the premier community centers, the anchors within our cities. So they bring people together, they provide literacy, they provide training, they provide resources for everyone that comes into our communities. Poor, rich, housed, unhoused, everybody in between, all communities are welcome within libraries. And I think that message of openness, of welcoming, is what sets libraries apart from any other public institution. And the fact that right now we are in a time where loneliness is such a critical issue that is facing people of all stripes all throughout this nation. You know, we heard this from the Surgeon General that loneliness is a crisis that is impacting our health. It's impacting the way we interact with one another. And libraries are a place where people can come together, even if that's just to be in another space with others, rather than just having a conversation. What that does for you, how that can spark interest, how that can create space where you feel less lonely. Beyond the fact that there's so many programs available within libraries, whether you're thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, whether you're a new American trying to learn English, you know, whether you're trying to take your child to a story time, all of this is happening within libraries every day. And I would recommend, whether you need a book or whether you want to make sure you're taking part in one of those programs, go out to your local library.
I imagined you doing the Reading Rainbow opening right now. sorry. I think it's very easy to underestimate the profound impact that the library has on the community. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was back when I served as one of the chiefs of staff within the National Park Service, it was crazy because the libraries is where we went to engage the public. Like you said, it crossed housed, unhoused, it crossed economic, it crossed, you know, depending on where you went, it crossed racial. It was just such a great place, almost like an equalizer. Mm-hmm. Everyone had the opportunity. Do you feel like, again, and this is just me kind of nerding out for a second, do you feel like there's a push and pull between going to the library and being in these spaces with not only books, with this people and programs and opportunities and socialization and the technological world that we now are finding ourselves in and pushing towards? Do you see a disconnect, or should there be a bridge somewhere?
I think there is a bridge, because so many people, you know, 20 years, 25 years ago, at the advent of the internet being incredibly important into our lives, thought that libraries would be on the back burner and that people would no longer see libraries as valuable. And instead, you started to see more people coming to libraries. Libraries started to take on more community building aspects, thinking about programming in new ways. Certainly books, whether that be paper books or electronic books, continued to go up in circulation. So people still saw reasons to use libraries, because librarians are able to help you with so many different things that you might need to be accessing. So even as we see now with the advent of more usable AI, librarians are still going to be the best prompt engineers to help you find things with AI. So I don't see technology being anything but additive to the library. You know, we're going to incorporate technology into our libraries in a way that are going to help community members that might not be able to access that technology in quite the same way. I mean, the digital divide has always been a really, really strong concern within our country. And because libraries have equity as kind of core to what they do, they've always been there to try to figure out ways to bridge it. As we think about during the pandemic, you know, many kids didn't have internet access in their home. You know where they went? They went to the library. Whether it was in the heart of the pandemic where people weren't able to go inside, they were accessing library in the parking lots. Libraries were giving people hotspots that they could use. They were giving them laptops. You know, this is what libraries do. They're going to serve people where they are, what they need, when they need it.
So I want to then dive in specifically into you and how you lead this organization. I'm assuming that all your meetings are categorized using the Dewey Decimal System. we'll see how many people got that joke.
You have to be a certain age. Our catalog, so.
I still remember it. You are in a situation where you lead an organization that represents constituents that have very different circumstances, mm-hmm. in very different places at very different times. You're serving people. You have members who are in San Francisco. You have members who are, you know, the heart of, you know, the South, with different financial situations. Like, How do you, as a leader, again, this podcast is focused on individuals who are already either executives or looking to become executives, who are working with CEOs, working with leaders such as yourself. How do you serve so many different, what do they call it, serving different masters from so many different places across the world and across the country? How do you do it and do it effectively?
Well, I think one of the areas that's core to what we do at the Urban Libraries Council is create space for the leaders of those large public libraries to come together and learn from one another. And so what we're really hopeful to do and what we feel we do rather well, and it's why we term ourselves an innovation and action tank, is that we create resources, whether that's research, whether that's guidebooks, whether that's programming that we're developing, leadership programming, or philanthropy funded, programming that we're doing together with those libraries. And by creating that space for library leaders to learn from one another, that is something that crosses boundaries, whether you're in the South, whether you're in a big city or smaller city, whether you're in Canada or whether you're in the United States. All of these leaders share something which happens oftentimes in leadership. There's not many other leaders directly around them in the same space. And so by having a network where, you might be one of the only big library leaders in your state, or there might be two or three of you, suddenly you can join with another 170 library leaders that may not be facing everything that you're facing, but they are certainly facing some of the same challenges, seeing some of the same opportunities, trying to understand what it means to run rather large organizations. When you think about some of these library systems, some of our smaller systems may have, 5 to 10 branches. Some of our larger ones, our largest, Toronto, has over 100. And then you've got everything in between those. Yeah. And so those are rather large organizations, and everything from RFPs to staffing issues, to challenges to democracy and book bans, all of these things are happening in different contexts and different places.
You just brought up a very interesting point. Oh my God, let's see if I can go that way. And okay, so can I get? You brought up so many things I want to talk about. First we'll go with the easy question. You seem to be fairly effective at being a convener, bringing different people, different organizations together. Because you can't just bring people together and say, okay, now solve your problem. Like, that doesn't work. Like, how did you learn to effectively convene, which can be big personalities, right? Big personalities, big differences at times. How have you learned to do that effectively? And what do you recommend for others who need to also be a convener such as yourself?
Sure, I think this is a skill set that I learned rather early on. My leadership journey began back when I was in my 20s. That I started work at the American Institute of Architects when I finished graduate school. And I had a wonderful mentor and boss there that allowed me to lead and allowed me to grow within my position. And by the time I was 28, I was a director there at the organization, which was rather young for that organization. And it put me in spaces with much more senior people. And I had to quickly learn what it meant to bring people together that were more senior than me, had a lot of different varied ideas that sometimes were competing with one another. And in that type of space and that type of environment, I started to understand what it meant to build larger networks and what it meant to bring people together with varying interests and ideas. And so building on that, as my career continued to progress, I found that by convening groups of people, by creating great programs, making sure people were learning and taking away from what they were doing while there, because I think what we all know as busy executives is you're busy, your time's important. And so you don't want to convene people together and not give them something that they see as valuable. And so learning that early on made me think about how I built programs, how I decided when to bring people together, what made a successful program. And a lot of that, just was really, really making sure we were at the cutting edge of whatever topic was that we were talking about. We were bringing in speakers that could give people around that table something that they didn't already know. And so that, I think, is incredibly important. And it's something we continue today, that when we launched our event called the CEO Roundtable last year, we brought together about 60 library CEOs in New York. And we were focused on workforce issues and how public libraries can help impact workforce. And so not only did we have an amazing experiential ability to walk through the New York Public Library and see how, you know, world-class library system did this, but we also brought in leaders to talk about what was going on in the AI field and how that would impact libraries. You know, that type of convening, bringing people together, allowing them to learn something at the cutting edge when it's new and it's happening and starting to affect them is incredibly important and something I always try to keep my finger to the pulse on.
So I love that you said, I love the idea of cutting edge and just kind of being out there and always providing what you talked about is providing value. Mm-hmm. So that is providing information, context, tools, strategy, whatever it is that they need versus what you think is important. Right. And so that it kind of takes you in that path of ego, right? Like I think it's very easy to want to convene people and then make it about you because you're so smart and you know the answers. And you, have you ever seen, I don't want you to call anyone out, but have you ever seen, let's do this. What types of events have you seen people convene that were not effective? And you were like, hey, you know, this is not how I would do it because of these X reasons.
I think you were about to kind of hit on the point, which is events that are centered around individuals that were there as the leader rather than centered on what it is that your constituents want and need. There's always a healthy balance because as a leader, you need to be thinking ahead of what's going on and have some understanding of what might come next. You're not always going to be right, but you need to be able to kind of have your finger on the pulse and think about, you know, what might a year from now look like? What might 3 years from now look like? And project and figure out and bring together people that can help create that type of dynamic. But yeah, I think leaders that are just purely in it for themselves rather than for kind of the broader purpose of what their organization is can really create a challenging meeting. And I've been to a couple of them, not too many, but I've been to a couple.
But if you still want to advance in your career, you want to do more good, then you have to make it about you, right? Because then no one will know that you're awesome, right? Is that
you know, I think that you don't need to make it purely about you. You need to build good teams. You need to lift people up that are around you because that'll ultimately accrue back to you, which is by developing amazing people, they're going to be out there in whatever city you're living in, kind of the work that you're doing, saying, hey, working with him was great. I learned so much. And they're going to go be leaders themselves. And so that's going to be your network long term. So I do believe that none of us can do this on our own. You know, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm bad at. I've never been somebody that thinks that I'm great at everything. I've built teams where I've hired people that have incredible skill sets that I lack because that's how you build a really high functioning team. And I think that's something where leaders, particularly earlier on, when you're a little bit more cautious, you're a little more concerned because people are observing you all the time, that you feel like you have to do everything. And when you do that, when you grind and work 80, 90 hours a week, you're not doing things at the level that you need to be doing them. Yeah. And that, I think, is one of the things I've learned over the years, which is you have to be focused. You have to make sure that you're keying in on what's core to your organization. And if you're drawn in, you know, 1,000 different directions, you're never going to be able to have that kind of strong focus that's going to make you a successful leader.
That is completely, that's super powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Brooks. Then I want to continue down that path. You talk about your team. You know, you talked about, you know, realizing you don't know everything. And I guess, you know, if I'm being completely transparent, I don't know what that feels like. My wife says I know everything. And I'm a know-it-all. Some people think she's being sarcastic, but I believe she's being honest with me. because I trust her. She wouldn't steer me wrong. I was moderating a panel for one of DC government's, actually DC government's largest division, department. The director of that department, as well as the now former CEO of Ashley Stewart. So I was moderating a good discussion between the three of us in front of their staffs. And it was like 1,000 people in the room. And let me tell you, when I talked about the director of that agency, like, people's faces lit up. Like, they were excited. They were supportive. Like, they loved working with her. Mm-hmm. What do you do? I know you have a team that supports and loves working with you just as much. What do you do to create that space where your staff feels heard, they feel included, they feel supported, but also they feel challenged? Like, how do you do that?
So to me, I think so much of it comes down to driving a vision, making that vision very clear, and then creating space for people to thrive. You know, I want to always make sure that people have the resources that they need. They have my support. They have other leaders' support within the organization. And then they're able to go out there and do their job and do their job incredibly well. You have to have regular check-in meetings and all of those things that any executive is going to tell you. But at the end of the day, that being able to watch people grow, being able to mentor, you know, people as they are growing, and then to see them thrive, that's just one of the most excellent parts of this job. And I really do feel like you have to create that environment. And it takes time, because some people might be coming from environments that were not like that. And so they're cautious in their approach to how they do their work. A lot of people are afraid to fail. You know, I think that's something, particularly those in the public sector, has been ingrained in us. That if you fail, that can be a really, really big mistake. That's a challenge that could lose people jobs, you know, that can create kind of public issues. And so creating a dynamic where it's okay to fail as long as you learn from it, as long as the outcome of that is we create something better long term, I think that type of dynamic is also incredibly important in any kind of discussion about this.
You know, Brooks, there's two questions I want to slide in, but you talked about that failure, people being afraid of failure, especially those in the public sector, being very cognizant and cautious of that. I remember watching an interview of the, goodness gracious, the leader, the top leader of NASA, and he wasn't knocking Elon Musk, but he did very importantly say, yeah, everyone's saying like how great it was and how successful he was and how, you know, how brave he was to do this. But he was like, you can't compare him to NASA. You know, he said he blew up like between 6 and 8 rocket ships before it actually worked. And he said, if we had done that, we would have been shut down at the second or third. Like, we would have never had that many opportunities to fail. But it was that failure that allowed the ultimate success. So it sounds like we have to, especially if you're in the public sector, you have to find a way to allow that failure, or you will never have the opportunity to have those big wins. So I want to put that on the table. I want to ask you, how do you, again, we kind of live in, unfortunately, a political world and kind of polarized. How do you serve so many communities, again, so many different places across America, while also without pigeonholing or only fitting in one bucket where you're not going to be heard from another side who may be or one of your constituents? I say this because you brought up book banning, right? Mm-hmm. And that is that has a political lean to it. It shouldn't, but it does. It's like, how do you navigate these big topics that are really important without, you know, ostracizing other pieces of or other people or segments of your constituents?
So I think first and foremost, you have to be core to what it is you and your organization stand for. I mean, we stand for intellectual freedom, democracy, and we stand against book bans, full stop. So I'm going to start there. That doesn't mean that you can't talk to somebody that may have differing political beliefs about a whole host of issues that we're going to agree on. I mean, everybody agrees that we should be focused on literacy with young people in this country. Libraries are core to that.
Yeah.
Everybody agrees that we should grow small businesses and have a strong economy. Libraries can support entrepreneurship. You know, everybody agrees that we should have story times for kids, that we should be able to have maker spaces that people can walk into a library and use to build something. You know, I think that most people would agree that libraries being a place that's, you know, provide supportive social services to those that need them within our communities is a net good for society. So while there are those that may disagree on what books should be available in a public library, honestly, from all the polling I've seen, from what I feel deep in my heart, I think that's a very small minority of the American public. I think that it's oftentimes centralized in certain areas, and I think there are politicians and others that try to make it seem like it's a lot more people than it truly is. Mm-hmm. And so by having a discussion about what it means to allow librarians who are professionals to curate collections that make sure we have books that represent all of our community members, I'll happily have that conversation with anybody that wants to have it.
Awesome, Brooks. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I want to throw in one last question. I want to open the floor to you after that. I got a little boy. He is 7.5 months. He is freaking ridiculously cute. He's going to get all the things. Well, he already gets all the things he wants from his mom. I'm staying strong. We'll see how long that goes. I was thinking about, as I'm thinking about how to raise him, I love any advice you have. You know, I grew up in a house, in a place where, and look, this is the reality, the vast majority of people who ultimately end up in senior level executive positions, who are of high net worth and so on and so forth, did not start there. Mm-hmm. They generally started from very, very low, medium, whatever you want to call it, means, and they had to work their way there. And so they experience life differently than what their kids likely experience life. And so I'm already thinking now of, you know, when do I make things harder for him? When do I make him work for something versus providing with something? When do I, you know, make that call to support him and get an opportunity versus him doing it himself? Like, how do you decide? Like, what advice do you have on raising a good human being without making the life too difficult or too hard or too easy? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something that I struggle with myself as I think about raising my own child. And my best advice is to make sure that your children are well aware of what is going on in the world. Make sure that there's space where they can go out and volunteer. And, you know, whether it's something as small as volunteering at a soup kitchen or just making sure that they are out there in public and understand that everybody doesn't have the same resources. The community that I'm sure you all live in or we live in here is not necessarily what most Americans live in. You have to have these types of conversations. You have to have conversations about financial literacy and what that looks like is too. It's always a challenge though on like how hard you want to make it on your kids to have them feel what you felt as you were growing up. I think that's always a very difficult balance because we work to get into these positions so that we can provide for our families. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you do want to make sure that we have well-rounded children and they grow up and make the world a better place. So I think always reminding them of that. I mean, it's part of why I've spent my career in the nonprofit sector is because while I might be able to pivot to working in the private sector, I've always had as kind of my core central goal that I want to make a difference in the world. That fundamentally, that's why I do what I do. And it's a through line that I've seen throughout my whole career. And so I think as long as you're reminding your children of the difference they can make and helping them do that and helping them realize that, I think we're all going to be in a good place.
Thank you so much for that, Brooks. I learn a lot from this. I shared with you before, some of my clients are terrified. They're like, I think I messed up. I think my kids think money grows on trees and I'm really worried for them. Other people are saying, nah, my kids are going to learn it just like I learned it. And so like I said, finding that happy medium is not easy for most people. And so I appreciate you sharing your perspective, and you make me think of two things. One, I'm going to open it up to you. One, I think of Michelle Obama. She talked about, I didn't read the whole book, admittedly, but in her first book, right after Obama was out, her husband was out of office, she talked about how her parents did not have a kids' table. The kids sit at the table with the adults and they engage the kids in conversation, in real conversation, asking their thoughts. What do you think about this? Why do you think this? And she said, like, just how impactful that was for them to have them understand, like you said, what's happening in the world. And then two, I think if, you know, at our baby shower, some people thought that, they're like, you know, he asked the question, you know, who's going to spoil the kid more? And I always said it was going to be my wife. Cause I don't like buying stuff. I'm not a consumer. But you know, my friend brought up to me afterwards, she's like, well, Alex, I think you might do it because spoiling is subjective. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to have your son traveling a lot. And I completely agreed. I'm like, yeah, cause I want him to understand what the world looks like. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I'm just saying this to say it out loud, spoiling is very subjective. Mm-hmm. And we have to kind of have conversations about this to see what is, you know, too much spoiling, whatever, or not enough. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about it as much on the travel front, but you're right on
that. I want you to learn about the world. So we're going to Disney World, okay?
Still haven't made that trip, and I grew up in Florida.
I've told my wife I'm gonna tell him that it's not real. That Disneyland is not real. It's just in the movies. So, hey Brooks, thank you so much for hanging out with us. I want to open the floor for you. What is there any advice, thoughts, anything you'd like to share with the guests as with our audience as we begin to wrap up?
Sure. I think one thing that's incredibly important to remember is that this type of leadership journey that I've been on and that anybody's been on is not possible to do on your own. That you really can't get to these types of leadership roles as CEO or other senior leadership opportunities without people that have helped you along the way. And I'd just like to thank them because those mentors, those supervisors that I've had, those family members, those friends, those colleagues, have made all the difference, because by working with great people, by learning from others, that's what has made me successful and will continue to drive me going forward. And I think the last thing I would leave you with is always stay creative and curious, because that to me is just so, so key to my own success and to what drives me on a daily basis. I want to learn more. There's so much that I still have to learn in my life, and I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, Brooks, you're spot on every single way. And I'll echo your thanks to all of those people, the mentors, the bosses, the supervisors, the colleagues, the employees, everyone who was there for you, for us, for everyone who's listening. There has to be a huge thanks, because like you said, no one can achieve anything of significance on their own. they say, well, one is too small a number to do anything of significance. Thank you so much, Brooks. Thank you so much for everyone for listening and being here for today. You know where I'm going. If you felt there was something of value you took from today's conversation, don't just say that person over there should have been here. My friend, my colleague, my mom, my dad, my sister, my brother, my cousins, all those people should have been listening. Don't do that. Bring the conference, the information to them. Push the share, push the like, comment. Don't just look back. Reach back, bring someone else this conversation and bring the information to them. Again, if it felt on your heart and made you think a different way and going to change your life, I promise you to do the same to someone else. Again, I love being here with my guests. And I love being here with all of you. Thank you so much for being on this journey with us. As always, I encourage you to stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving. See ya. Thanks for listening to The Executive Appeal with Alex Trumbull. I invite you to follow The Executive Appeal wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow me, your host, Alex Trumbull, across all socials or via email for exclusive webinars, courses, and speaking engagements on continued topics of executive leadership. So, until next time, stay strong, stay positive, and definitely stay moving.